Our Lenten journey continues as we are now entering the final hours of Jesus' life. The next few Sundays can be very difficult because we will be reflecting on the horrific events of Jesus' sentence to death, his beatings, his torture, and his crucifixion. So in these moments, I want to encourage you to embrace fully this part of the journey, because there is much that we can learn from these final hours. And if you find yourself wanting to avoid these last moments, it's understandable. The content does not always leave us feeling happy thoughts, warm, fuzzy feelings. However, I want to invite you to ask God in these moments, what do you want me to learn through this part of Jesus' life story? And as you ask that question, I want to invite you to then take the time to listen. Let's listen to this last part of Jesus' story.
From the Gospel of Mark, chapter 15, verses 1 through 15. As soon as it was morning, the chief priests held a consultation with the elders and scribes and the whole council. They bound Jesus, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate. Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" He answered him, "You say so." Then the chief priests accused him of many things. Pilate asked him again, "Have you no answer? See how many charges they bring against you?" But Jesus made no further reply, so that Pilate was amazed. Now at the festival, he used to release a prisoner for them, anyone for whom they asked. Now a man called Barabbas was in prison with the rebels who had committed murder during the insurrection. So the crowd came and began to ask Pilate to do for them according to his custom. Then he answered them, "Do you want me to release for you the king of the Jews?" For he realized that it was out of jealousy that the chief priests had handed him over. But the chief priests stirred up the crowd to have him release Barabbas for them instead. Pilate spoke to them again, "Then what do you wish me to do with the man you call the king of the Jews?" They shouted back, "Crucify him!" Pilate asked them, "Why? What evil has he done?" But they shouted all the more, "Crucify him!" So Pilate, wishing to satisfy the crowd, released Barabbas for them. And after flogging Jesus, he handed him over to be crucified. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
Thank you, Charlie. Last week we learned of how Jesus stood before the Sanhedrin and endured an illegal trial that left him guilty of blasphemy in the eyes of the righteous. In our eyes, though, we found Jesus guilty of only one thing. If you were with us, what was it? Love. We found Jesus guilty only of love. And we will continue to reflect on that love today as we encounter a part of Jesus' life that has left scholars and theologians debating for centuries. See, the custom of delivering a prisoner on the day of the Passover really was intended as an act of grace on the part of the Roman authorities toward the Jews. And by the Jews, it may have been accepted as a significant complement of that Passover feast and of that Passover time. Since on that day themselves, they were delivered out of the land of Egypt, they may have thought that it would be a fitting thing that an imprisoned person should also obtain his liberty. And since one prisoner must be delivered, Pilate thinks that he has an opportunity of allowing Jesus to escape without compromising his own character with the authorities at home, back in Rome. So he asks the people which of they that they will prefer, a notorious criminal or Jesus. And it's probable that Barabbas had been all the way up until that point kind of obnoxious to the crowd. And yet, his former unpopularity, the crowd instigated by the religious authority, they forget all of his faults, and they prefer him to Jesus. See, as followers of Jesus, this is a heart-wrenching scene. It's not fair. It's not just. And why did Jesus, who was guilty only of love, have to die in the place of a known murderer and insurrectionist by the name of Barabbas? What is the greater purpose? What is the greater meaning behind this inhumanity? Theologians and scholars have debated its meaning for centuries. And in theological circles, we have come to describe what has happened here as atonement. At-one-ment. That the death of Jesus makes us one with God again. It puts us in right relationship with God. Jesus giving his life for us, the sinner, so that we may not be separated from God. Jesus paid a price he did not owe, giving us a gift of grace we did not deserve. And therein, I believe, lies the meaning and the message for us this morning. And while the moment before us is vile and beyond all sensibilities, we are called to embrace a deeper truth that shines through Jesus in this very moment. And that is the truth of grace. Jesus reveals to us the costliness of grace. And it is in that grace that we become right with God again. So we're going to explore what this grace looks like in ways that we might be able to understand it a little bit more. When Jermaine Washington was 26 years old, he did something that amazed many people. He became a kidney donor, giving a vital organ to a woman he described as just a friend. Jermaine met Michelle Stevens, who was 23 at the time when they began working together at the Washington, D.C. Department of Employment Services. And they used to have lunch together with one another. They used to talk with each other during breaks. And Michelle said, "One day I cried on his shoulder. I had been on the kidney donor waiting list for 11 months, and I had lost all hope." So she told Jermaine how depressing it was to spend 3 days a week, 3 hours a day on a kidney dialysis machine. She suffered chronic fatigue. She suffered blackouts. She was plagued by joint pain. He could already see that she had lost her smile. "I saw my friend dying before my eyes," he said. "What was I supposed to do? Sit back and just watch her die?" Michelle's mother was suffering from hypertension, so she was ineligible to donate a kidney. Her two brothers were reluctant. "I understood," she said. "They said that they loved me very much, but they were just too afraid." I think we can all understand that. And Jermaine underwent the painful procedure necessary during that time to determine if he was a fit for a transplant. And a week later, the surgery took place, and he remained in the hospital for 5 days after. Well, Michael and Jermaine fully recovered, and 3 times a month, they get together for what they call a gratitude lunch. And to this day, people wonder why Jermaine did what he did. They even, some of them, question his own sanity. But when one admirer asked him where he had found the courage to give away a kidney, his answer quelled the skeptics, and he said, "I prayed for it. I asked God for guidance, and that was the answer I received." There are many stories like this that remind us that true love, love laying down our life for our brother and for our sister, it is costly. Dave Simmons shares it in a story in his book. His book is called Dad, the Family Coach. And he shares this particular story about his daughter. He said, "I took Helen, who was 8 years old, and my son Brandon, 5 years old, to the Cloverleaf Mall in Hattiesburg to do a little shopping. And as we drove up, we spotted a Peterbilt 18-wheeler parked with a big sign on it that said, 'Petting Zoo.'" Even if you had kids and you all of a sudden show up and it says, "Petting Zoo," what are you going to do, right? You're going to go to the petting zoo. So the kids jumped up and they got excited. They said, "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy, can we go? Can we go? Please, can we go?" And so, "Sure," he said, flipping them both a quarter. It shows you how long ago it was. but both a quarter before walking into Sears. And they bolted away, he said, and then he goes on to say, I felt free to take my time looking for a scroll saw. A petting zoo consists of a portable fence erected in the mall with about 6 inches of sawdust and 100 little furry baby animals of all kinds. Kids pay their money and stay in the enclosure, enraptured with the squirmy little creatures while their moms and dads shop. He goes on to say, a few minutes later, I turned around and saw Helen walking along behind me. I was shocked to see that she preferred the hardware department to the petting zoo. Recognizing my error, I bent down and I asked her what was wrong. She looked up at me with those giant, limpid brown eyes and said sadly, well, Daddy, it cost 50 cents. So I gave Brandon my quarter. And then she said the most beautiful thing I have ever heard. She repeated the family motto. He says, the family motto is, love is action. She had given Brandon her quarter. And no one loves cuddly, furry creatures more than Helen. She had watched her mom and me do and say, love is action for years around the house. She had heard and seen, love is action, and now she had incorporated it into her little lifestyle. It had become a part of her. What do you think I did? He asked. Well, not what you might think. As soon as I finished my errands, I took Helen to the petting zoo, and we stood by the fence, and we watched Brandon go crazy, petting and feeding the animals. Helen stood with her hands and her chin resting on the fence and just watched Brandon. I had 50 cents burning a hole in my pocket. I never offered it to Helen. And she never asked for it. Because she knew the whole family motto. It's not love is action, it's love is sacrificial action. Love always pays a price. Love always costs something. Love is expensive. And when you love, benefits accrue to another's account. Love is for you, not for me. Love gives. It doesn't grab. Helen gave her quarter to Brandon and wanted to follow through with her lesson. She knew she had to taste the sacrifice. She wanted to experience that total family motto. Love is sacrificial action. It's a beautiful story that reminds us of the costliness of love. And it gives us a glimpse into the kind of love that Jesus has for us. But the costliness of grace, friends, it goes even deeper. You know, we know it in our own lives, and we even hear about it in the scriptures as they tell us that it's easy to love those who love us. It's even easier to sacrifice for those that we believe deserve our love or are deserving of our respect because they believe like we do or they live like we do or we have some kind of a special connection with them. That is easy. But grace, on the other hand, is a love that is undeserved. It is a love that we do not earn. It is a love that exists regardless of who we are, regardless of what we do. It is a love that breaks down barriers, and it's a love that shows radical mercy and hospitality and forgiveness. It is a grace that motivated Jesus to stand in the place of Barabbas, to stand in our place, to show us a different and better way. Timothy Keller wrote about the impact of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Many of you know Dietrich Bonhoeffer, a pastor who was killed because his faith led him to stand up against the powerful regime of Adolf Hitler. And Keller writes this. He says, by the time of Hitler's ascension, much of the church understood grace only as abstract acceptance. God forgives. That's his job. But we know that true grace comes to us by costly sacrifice. And if God was willing to go to the cross and endure such pain and absorb such a cost in order to save us, then we must live sacrificially as we serve others. Anyone who truly understands how God's grace comes to us will have a changed life. That's the gospel. Not salvation by law, not salvation by cheap grace, but by costly grace. Costly grace changes you from the inside out. Neither law nor cheap grace can do that. And as Pastor Tulilian Chavidian, I always mess up that word, that name, as he says, grace is being loved when you are unlovable. And grace is irrational in the sense that it has nothing to do with weights and measures. It has nothing to do with intrinsic qualities or so-called gifts, whatever they may be. Grace gives, and from our vantage point, it always gives to the wrong person. We see this over and over and over again in the Gospels. Jesus is always giving to the wrong people. Prostitutes, tax collectors, it could go on. It doesn't keep score. It refuses to be controlled by our innate sense of fairness and reciprocity and even-handedness. It even defies logic. It has nothing to do with earning merit or deservedness. It is opposed to what is owed. It doesn't expect a return on investments. It is a liberating contradiction between what we deserve and what we get. Grace is unconditional acceptance, even to an undeserving person, by an unobligated giver. It is one-way love. Jesus came to liberate us from the weight of having to make it on our own, from the demand to measure up. He came to emancipate us from the burden to get it all right, from the obligation to fix ourselves, to find ourselves, to free ourselves. Jesus came to release us from the slavish need to be right, to be rewarded, to be regarded, and to be respected, because Jesus came to set the captives free. Life does not have to be this tireless effort to establish ourselves, to justify ourselves, and to validate ourselves. And once this good news grips our heart, it changes everything. It frees you from having to be perfect. It frees you from having to hold it all together. And in the place of exhaustion, you might even find energy. Now see, the gospel of grace is not too good to be true, because it is true. It's the truest truth in the entire universe. God loves us independently of what we or what others may or may not bring to the table. There are no strings attached. No ifs, no ands, no buts. No qualifiers, no conditions. No need for balance. Because grace is the most dangerous, expectation-wrecking, smile-creating, counterintuitive reality that there is. And when we live into the fullness of grace, friends, it changes us. And it changes our world. But because it is so different from what the world expects, it will cost us. And it will cost us our life, the whole of our very being. When the grace of Jesus defines us, it could cost us acceptance and respect of those who say they love us. It could cost us the status and privilege that we have come to enjoy. It could cost us our own comfort. When the grace of Jesus defines us, it could cost us our attitudes and our opinions and our positions that we have always come to know. It could cost us the scorn of a world that doesn't quite understand. Jesus, the one who sacrificed everything to save us and to show us a more life-giving way, he stands before you this morning. And he stands before us. And he asks us. He asks you. What will it cost you? What will it cost you? And what will it cost you? Thank you. Thank you. We want to thank you for listening to our podcast. If you want to help us share hope in our world, please subscribe, like, or review our podcast, or you can go to our website at hopechangeslives.org. Have a blessed day.